This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. G.F. Morgan began his musical career in 1963 playing folk music. The Pennsylvania native says he followed the music and in 1974 moved to Northern California. In 1975 he moved to Texas and in 1977 back to Pennsylvania. In 1988 he shifted his focus to Celtic music and helped form the band Renegade. Celtic has been his passion ever since. GF joins me today to talk about his new record, Driftwood, and his musical journey from folk to Celtic music on this edition of Americana Music Profiles. Hello, GF. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Thanks for taking the time to speak with us today. I am looking forward to learning about what you've been up to. You've kind of been at this for a little while, haven't you?
At this? Yes. Quite a while.
Yeah. if I read correctly, you were in the folk music scene in the early 60s, is that right?
Yes. That's where I first started learning music on my own by way of watching other people play guitar and just picking up chords and finger styles and, songs. Songs were my favorite, and my friends all say I have incredible memory for songs and music.
Yeah.
So I started learning it at about the age of 10 years old.
Okay. So this was a childhood thing for you. Did you have family influence?
I did. Well, I started with piano at about age 5, classical piano, but I never got very far with it. My father was going to be a classical pianist, and he played every night. The reason he didn't was because of the Second World War. He went into the army, and
okay.
When he came out, he didn't have his edge anymore, and he never was able to get it back again.
I see. Wow.
Yeah. So, but there was a lot of music in the family. My mother practiced guitar. She played. She played in a group of artist circles, one of whom was Carl Sandburg.
Oh, cool.
And I have a sister who's musical. So it was great doing music in the family.
So you've settled into this Celtic theme, but that wasn't what you started out in, is that right?
No, it's always been something that's been in my life. My father, I think when the Clancy brothers first came over from Ireland, my father brought home their album.
Okay.
And I probably wore, got played it so many times that the needle went straight on through to the other side. So it's always been there for me. I've always loved Celtic music, Scottish, Irish, Welsh.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always been there, but no, I originally started playing like every kid wanted to play rock and roll and be a star.
Right.
And then I realized that you had to go work into it. and you actually had to work at this to be good at
it. Yeah, yeah.
So I decided that I would move on, and I found an old John Duffy and the Country Gentlemen album.
Oh, cool.
Which, is, of course, is bluegrass.
Right.
And I started following that and learning. I heard the mandolin on that. I picked up an old mandolin, that secondhand mandolin, started learning that. And, kept right at it. And then I started hearing Celtic music, Boys of the Loch, the Chieftains, and switched over pretty quickly. I also did a stint as a sideman in country western music for a couple of different people when I lived in Texas.
Okay.
But Celtic has always been there. It's always been something that's moved me very much emotionally.
Okay. Yeah, I read where you had moved around a bit into different musical communities. Was there a particular thing that caused you to move so much, or just restless spirit?
I think I was just searching, really. I tended to be drawn to areas where music was alive. And when I say alive, I mean people weren't just listening to it. People were taking it, making it their own through their interpretations or writing it. And it was active, not dormant or stagnant.
Mm-hmm.
So areas like Austin, Texas, mm-hmm. in the 70s, you know, with Willie and, oh, my word, how many stars came out of that?
Right, yeah.
So Austin was a great place to be. Northern California was very, very fine as well, because there was a lot of, you know, experimental music going on. People were open to new ideas. Wherever the community has good music, I think there are good ideas flowing, and the world is growing. That's my way of looking at it.
When did you lock into Celtic as your present form of music? When did you move from the rock to the folk? I think you even maybe dabbled in some bluegrass. When did Celtic kind of become your main style?
Celtic really started to open up for me in the early 1970s. And there were several musicians whose work really kind of opened that door.
Mm-hmm.
Andy Irvine, Paul Brady, being very much important in that, and the Chieftains, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I began to pick up the concertina at that point too, which I had no idea of. I heard a Liam Clancy album on which there was a rendition of "Lever Johnny Lever," which is of course a sea shanty,
mm-hmm.
or sea ballad. And I heard this instrument, and I thought, my goodness, how beautiful is that? And I happened to be in a local music store a couple of months later, and there was a concertina, and I thought, my word, that looks very difficult to play, 48
yeah.
buttons. But I went ahead and bought it, and taught myself how to play it.
Okay.
And I'm not an amazing concertina player. I just use it mostly to accompany vocal music. But I love the instrument. I love the way it works with the violin as well.
Mm.
Those two instruments in conjunction with each other create a very unique sound.
Have you been a songwriter the whole time?
Not really. I've dabbled with it a little bit. I'm starting to become more of one now.
Mm-hmm.
I never really liked what I wrote.
I think we're all our own worst critic.
Yeah, we are. But, you know, and then I started to rewrite things and look at things from a different perspective. And I was fortunate enough to study with a couple of really good guitar players over the last 4 or 5 years. And they opened up a world of guitar playing that I hadn't even thought of before, other alternate tunings and alternate ways of looking at music. So that made my songwriting, it facilitated ideas for me. So things were able to come more to the forefront.
This is maybe more of a subjective question, but is it easier or harder to write a Celtic song than it is to write a bluegrass or folk? I know they're kind of in the same family, but certainly the presentation is different.
Well, I don't know that it is. I think if you're writing it depends what sort of a song you're writing. If you're writing a personal sort of song, I think it's a very good vehicle for that. I think you can move easily within the ambiguity of Celtic music is that it seems to bridge between so many different genres. So I think that that could be easily, but now the ballad, if you're writing a ballad, say, or something like, you know, the band played Waltz and Matilda or something like that, it can be quite challenging.
Hmm.
One of the challenging things I've found is between the, is to come up, some of these ballads that are time-honored, coming up with new versions of them is particularly challenging.
I bet.
Because so many people have the old versions in their head. And one case where a band actually did come up with a new version, which really was sensational, was John Barleycorn by Traffic, which was, I believe, 1971 or 72.
Okay.
Amazing verse, but the original ballad that people were singing before that had a completely different melody and a chorus as well.
That's interesting. And I guess it's public domain, so you can adjust or manipulate those as you feel led, right?
Pretty much, but you have to be careful because sometimes other songwriters are writing in the traditional vernacular, and it's really easy to hear something and think, oh, that's been around hundreds of years, when in fact it was written 5 years ago.
Right, okay, yeah.
So one has to tread carefully
and
do diligent research on everything.
We're going to pause for just a moment. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Music Magazine.
Welcome back to the interview.
It's such a historic music with all kinds of backstory. When you write and perform, do you get in character? Is that part of it? Do you look for a sense of history when you sing and play?
I think it's sort of an obligation.
Okay.
I think that most of the better performers actually do that. They've gone in and they've looked at the time period and realized what the emotional and mental mindset of possibly the person telling the story was. I think that's an extremely important part of it. Mm-hmm. The emotion has to come through. I've always felt that, you know, in certain ballads, you know, you have to really understand what you're singing about. For instance, if you're singing about Sir John Franklin's expedition to find the Northwest Passage, you have to know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
That it was a tragic miscalculation on his part, and a very, very sad fate to the whole thing. In order to know that, to just perform the song without knowing that, I think you miss so much yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you understand the details of a song, then you can put the proper emotion and the proper emphasis behind certain things.
That's interesting. Do you sing and interact with the crowd in that dialect as well?
Not often. Sometimes in a joking manner. I don't think it's nice to deceive people that you're one way and actually be another.
Yeah.
I think that presents an item of doubt in the listener's mind.
Uh-huh.
However, if you want to know for sure whether a fellow's from Scotland or not, you can clown around with it. But you don't, I don't take on a persona. Sometimes I'll find that a ballad that was written, say, in broad Scots, you have to sing it in broad Scots.
Okay.
Or your best attempt at that. The other one I have a great deal of difficulty is so many of the singers sing in their native languages now. In Scots Gaelic or Irish Gaelic, Welsh. And I think you really have to know those languages before you try to sing like that.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It's so easy to go wrong with
it. Yeah, I can imagine. Do you have deeper family ties to those parts of the country, do you know, or the world?
Other parts of the world, yes. Yes, I actually, Welsh is fairly predominant, but there's also a good portion of Scots and Irish in me, as well as English, Danish, Dutch, and French.
Hmm.
So Northwestern Europe is mostly my gene source.
Yeah, you know? Okay.
Other than Lee Wrangler, that's my gene source.
So the new record is Driftwood, and if I'm reading correctly, this is your third record, right?
It's the third one I've done. It's the first one I've done under my own name.
Okay.
And the other two that I did were first with a band called Renegade, and then that morphed into a group called Molly Hawks, which was fairly short-lived. Some of the players from Molly Hawks actually are on Driftwood. Nancy Brown and Bayard Osthaus were both in Molly Hawks. But this one was done up in Maine just before the pandemic started.
Okay.
I got started on the album. And my intention was to, while not being physically able to gather all the musicians in the same room, to send out the parts and see what came back.
Mm-hmm.
And then the pandemic hit, and I thought, oh, my Lord.
Right.
We're never going to be able to sit down and play this together.
Yeah.
You know, to get a feel of what each other are doing. Sure, that's so important to musicians, to actually see and hear in person. So I sent out digital copies. My engineer sent them out, and he did an amazing job, by the way, Steve Austin. I just sat there and I shuddered because I thought we didn't use sound clicks on it, so I had no idea what was going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And one by one, they started coming back, and these friends of mine did such a wonderful job.
Mm.
It all synced up pretty close enough where we could fit it in.
Mm-hmm.
I was very, very happy with the result.
That's cool.
And I'm very, very pleased, and I'm very, very grateful to all of them for taking the time to do that.
How long has the finished product been out?
Oh, it's been out since, just roughly December.
Okay, so just a couple months.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is your intention to get these folks or a group of people together as a band and tour this as soon as
I would love to. Yeah. I would love to. I think, you know, time will tell where we're all going to be with touring and with performing. I know every single one of those musicians that I've spoken with is raring at the starting gate.
Oh, yeah. We're all waiting for that green flag, man.
I know. I mean, it's just such an integral part of being a musician. I mean, you can play in your living room I've been playing in my living room for my dog, who is, you know, a wonderful audience because he sits there and snores through the whole thing. But, you know, getting out and getting, you don't get any feedback.
Right,
until you're out there.
Yeah.
And it's very hard for me. I mean, I've put some stuff online and put some stuff out there in the internet. And it's very hard to me to gauge real emotion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, people have complimentary, that people love it. I've gotten good reviews on the album. You know, it's not the same as being there with the audience and really connected. Know that you've made a difference in someone's life.
We're missing that third dimension, and it's easy to get the digital stuff lost in the ethers because everybody's trying to reach an audience. And, that that third dimensional piece, like you said, with the live interaction is critical for the artist and the audience, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's essential. It's essential.
So have you been writing in the, is there more to come? Do you have something else
yes,
on the way?
Yeah, there's definitely more to come. I've rewritten several ballads with new music, several traditional ballads, including the Ballad of Tam Lin. I've also written several original pieces, some instrumental pieces. And I have some old traditional sea songs, which I have ready to go. And also the other ballad I did was Rosemary Fair, which I think is the forerunner. It's what Simon and Garfunkel based. Scarborough Fair.
Okay.
There's numerous versions out there. Rosemary Fair, I think, is an earlier version. It's one of those riddle songs where it's two young people. It's so typical of young people. There's two young people that obviously have an attraction to each other, but they don't want to admit it. So they set each other impossible tasks to perform. You want to be my true lover, you have to go do this and this and this and this. And, you know, and then the woman turns around to him and says, well, if you want to be my true lover, then you're going to have to do this, 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 and this. And it's sort of like, well, I guess we're not going to be together. Okay.
That's
so typical. And, you know, you look at some of those very, very old, you know, some are 400 or 500 years old.
Yeah.
And you see things that are true of humanity today.
Right, yeah.
For instance, Tam Lin, I think, well, my version's a shortened version, but it starts off with the father telling his daughter, says, don't go to Carter Hall. You know, it's like any father today would say, look, if you're going out driving with Billy, watch you home by night.
Yeah, right.
And I don't want you going to the bar down the street.
Yeah.
So immediately, what does she do? She goes to Carter Hall. She's like, can't wait to get there.
Right.
So typical, you know, and I think every parent can probably relate to that.
Right.
You,
yeah,
your
absolutely.
Child, don't do this, and it's the first thing they go to. But, you know, and you get those themes that come up again and again. To make those, to bring those up to date, I think, is the challenge of a ballad performer. To make a modern audience, because I think a lot of it fell into this very, very specialized, esoteric, folk study kind of way. And people just wanted to kind of get the monarch notes on it and continue on and enjoy the piece of music for what it was.
So
I try to do that.
Yeah.
I'm not always successful, but yeah. I try to do that.
That's cool. So the record again is Driftwood, and out now, and hopefully people can catch you live soon. What's the best way to communicate with you? Website? Where can they get the CD?
My website there's a link to Bandcamp. If you go to Bandcamp and look for GF Morgan Driftwood, you will find it, as well as Molly Hawks' album. It's also on there. If you go to Amazon Prime, you can order actual hard copies of the CD, which has the research and everything in the booklet that comes with it, as well as all the lyrics. I believe I have the lyrics and a lot of the research up on Bandcamp as well, if you order the album digitally through Bandcamp.
Okay.
To me, there's nothing like having a hard copy.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah, I think anybody over 40 probably still feels that way, but maybe they'll come back. Vinyl's back, you know, maybe they'll come back. I don't know.
Well, LPs have come back.
Right, yeah.
Vinyl's come back. Yeah. Lord knows why.
Yeah.
There's
a nostalgia to it, and there's no time like the present to be nostalgic, because we certainly have some pretty disturbing and confusing things to try to fumble through these days. So maybe
that's true. I just got my first vaccination today after trying. So
yeah,
I'm lying in bed, kind of taking it easy. But yeah, I mean, my engineer was saying, "Oh, you've got to do an LP on this album," and I was like, "Really?" Are you sure?
Well, I think the Celtic folk bluegrass kind of traditional style lends itself to needing a piece of vinyl, maybe. It just feels like it.
I agree. I think I'm going to do it in a limited edition.
Yeah, yeah. Cool.
Yeah, so that, look for that in the future as well.
Well, thank you, Jeff. This has been fun. I appreciate you taking the time out of your rest from your shot to chat with us, and we wish you well with it, and I hope you can get out on the road soon.
Thank you. I hope we're out there soon.
Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.